ke aha ho o kolo kolo ki ike hano hano ua a koa koa ho maila. This Honorable Supreme Court is now reconvened.
Please call the case.
Case number SCAP 19-0000854, Yoshimura v. Kaneshiro. Arguing for the appellant, Keith M. Kiuchi. Arguing for the appellee, William C. McCorriston. Argument on the merits.
All right, good morning, aloha everyone. This proceeding is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel. During the proceeding, should a justice have a question, they will raise their hand and I'll call upon them at the earliest opportunity. I'd like to thank Judges Ashford and Eddins for sitting on the court today. And at this time, I'll ask our attorneys to introduce themselves in the order in which they'll be arguing, beginning with Mr. Kiuchi.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices, and Judges. My name is Keith Kiuchi. I represent Petitioner Appellant Tracy Yoshimura.
Thank you, Mr. McCorriston.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court. My name is William McCorriston, representing appellee Mr. Keith Kaneshiro.
All right, and just to confirm, thank you, good morning. Just to confirm, Mr. Kiuchi, you'll have 20 minutes to argue, reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. McCorriston, you'll have 30 minutes. You'll see a light and hear a tone at the end of your allotted time. Judge Ashford, I just note that your mic is still on. If you wanted to mute it. Question, thank you. All right, Mr. Kiuchi, if you would proceed.
Thank you. Justices and judges, this case is about the interpretation of Chapter 489E of the Hawaii Revised Statute, which is Hawaii's Electronic Signatures Act, and whether the city, in arbitrarily rejecting the electronic signature.
Oh, maybe it would be good. Mr. McCorriston, could you mute your mic as well? We're getting a lot of, I'm not sure if it's coming from you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see how that goes. Sorry, Mr. Kiuchi.
No problem. And the question is whether the city, in arbitrarily rejecting electronic signatures for the purposes of an impeachment petition, has complied with both Chapter 489E and the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act. Specifically, as we pointed out in our briefs, Chapter 489E 18A specifically requires each governmental agency of this state to determine, shall determine, whether and to the extent it will send and accept electronic records and electronic signatures. The circuit court below made a decision based upon 18C, which says that a governmental agency does not have to accept electronic signatures. However, the court overlooked 18A, which requires a governmental agency to determine whether and to the extent it will use electronic records and electronic signatures. Our point is that the city did not make that determination using the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act, which it was required to do. The argument that has been made by respondent and the city is that they didn't have to comply with the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act. And I would argue that that argument is totally incorrect. And that is because the application of 18 of the Electronic Signatures Act here does have an effect on the public. It does have prospective effect, and therefore the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act is applicable here. And there's no question that the city did not comply with the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act. What the city did is the city arbitrarily decided, without adopting any rules, that it was going to simply reject electronic signatures, and it elected to reject electronic signatures. And that is, I would argue, arbitrary and capricious. And that's the whole reason why the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act is in place, to prevent such an arbitrary and capricious decision without the rule of law. And here the city simply decided that, and decided that late, as the record shows. It didn't make that determination until an April 18th letter, which was followed up by an April 23rd letter. So even early on, after the petition was filed, despite several letters to the city didn't make the determination early on, and they certainly didn't comply with the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act. Without complying with the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act, they cannot simply deny the effect of electronic signatures. And I would point out that Chapter 489E, the whole intent is to accept and allow electronic signatures rather than to reject them. So the entire intent of the statute is to allow such a medium. And right now, that medium is even more important. Granted that when we filed and briefed this case, COVID-19 was not upon us. And now the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic makes mediums such as electronic signatures even more important and even more essential, as I pointed out, because it allows a form of direct democracy, in this case specifically, the petition to impeach Mr. Kaneshiro. Unless the justices have any other questions, I don't have anything else straight off right now.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Kiyuchi, I did have a question, but I hadn't unmuted my mic. So your position is that absent the rulemaking, the agencies are required to accept electronic signatures?
Yes, because the 18A requires a governmental agency to make that determination. And that determination simply cannot be made without complying with the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act. That is our position.
And so is it your view that all agencies of the state and counties have to proactively enact regulations, or they will be required to accept electronic signatures?
I don't think they're required to accept them, Mr. Chief Justice, but I think they're required to make a determination as to the extent to which they will accept them. I think they can reject the electronic signatures, but to do that, they've got to go through the rulemaking process and they've got to actually publish that. I think that's really important. They can elect not to accept them, but I think they've got to set forth the rationale, or at least set forth the reasons in the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act.
Very well. Any other questions for the court, from the court at this point? All right. Oh, Judge Edens.
Mr. Kiyuchi, you say that the Hawaii Uniform Electronic Transaction Act applies in this case. Can you tell me how, pursuant to 498E2, E3, and E5, how it applies? And those three provisions are that there be a transaction, that there be two or more persons relating to the conduct of the business, commercial, or government affairs, and E5 being that there be an agreement between the parties. How does this petition fit into 489E and those prerequisites?
It's a good question. And taking a page out of Anderson v. Bell, which is the Utah Supreme Court case, really the transaction isn't between Mr. Yoshimura and the city. Mr. Yoshimura would be more like a circulator of a petition, and the transaction is between him and the people that he seeks to get the signatures from. So that would actually be the transaction. The transaction is not between Mr. Yoshimura and the city. That's what the Utah Supreme Court in Anderson v. Bell found, that really the transaction was between the circulator of the petition and the individuals that signed the petition, because they consented to their electronic signature. And then it was presented to the Secretary of State in Utah. So I think, you know, looking at that decision in the Utah Supreme Court case, you can look at the transaction as one really being between Mr. Yoshimura, for lack of a better term, who's the circulator of the petition, and the individuals that signed the petition electronically.
Isn't the Anderson case embedded in there was a rule making criteria? Didn't the decision depend on that provision of the Utah law?
Well, what was interesting about, and respondent argued that in their answering brief, but what's interesting about the Utah law, it didn't have the word shall, it had the word may. It says they may make rules. The Hawaii law, by contrast, doesn't say that they shall make rules, but they shall make the determination. It's interesting because there's a difference, because the Utah law says they may make rules, yet the Utah Supreme Court said that they had to follow the rulemaking process. Hawaii has a mandate, it says shall. So that there is a difference between the statutes, but I would argue that the Hawaii statute is even stronger because of the language.
Well, what about the provision that I talked about in E5 about there having to be an agreement between the parties?
There is an agreement, again, between Mr. Yoshimura and those that signed the electronic signatures, fixed their signatures to the petition. And I think that's the agreement that speaks to.
So it's your position that the agreement has nothing to do with the city?
Right. The agreement, consistent with, again, with Anderson v. Bell, as well as speaking to the West Virginia case, is between whoever circulates the petition and the individual signing them, because that's really the transaction, so to speak, and then it's presented to the city for certification.
Let me ask you about the HAPA rulemaking. You know, say that the city allowed electronic signatures and that was, you know, acceptable. Would they have had to engage in rulemaking there?
I think that the mandate of 489E requires them to engage in rulemaking either way. I think they should have engaged in rulemaking either way, but they didn't.
Well, with electronic, say they're accepting electronic signatures, that is, let's say, an affirmative action that would probably require rulemaking. But in this case, they have used their permissive discretion not to accept electronic signatures. So what type of rulemaking would go on in that situation?
But they're not simply allowed to use their discretion without adopting rules, especially as I pointed out in the briefing, where the city in three instances, three different departments, DPP, the Holland Police Department, and the Department of Purchasing, have all used electronic signatures, and they've elected to use electronic signatures. The whole idea with HAPA is that you don't want a situation where the governmental agency simply does something arbitrarily, which the city has done here. So on one hand, they've accepted with three different instances. On the other hand, they've rejected it with electronic signatures for a petition.
At this point, I think Justice McKenna had a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Kinnicky. I'm wondering what you think about the Moncho case, in which this court actually, I'm sorry, while I'm asking questions, could you please unmute, because we're getting a lot of time. Thank you. I want to ask you about the effect, if any, of the Moncho order, in which I think it was, 2002, this court, this was an impeachment, it's impeachment of a council member, and the provisions are very similar to the impeachment of a prosecutor. It's the prior section, the language is basically identical except for the number of signatures required. And in that case, this court had to address the jurisdictional issue and required that the signatures be submitted to the city clerk to determine whether the jurisdictional requirement was being met. So how can the city clerk determine a jurisdictional issue without the actual original signature?
Well, in the Moncho case, there weren't electronic signatures, but in the Moncho case, it was first presented for filing to the Supreme Court because that was the process at the time. And then the court, I think, properly exercised its discretion to send it to the city clerk. In this case, we originally filed it with the circuit court, and the circuit court, at that point, would have had the discretion to send it over to the city clerk for certification, which in this case never happened. So, and I would argue that that should have happened. So initially, I think the filing was proper. We filed it with the circuit court, like the Monchel petition was filed with the Supreme Court, and it should have been referred over to the city clerk. Yeah, I'm sorry. But,
so if you mute again, thank you. So is it your position then that the city clerk would have to accept electronic signatures on votes, on ballots, without a rule that says they don't have to?
I think the city clerk would still have to certify. So this court goes back and says that electronic signatures should be accepted. It still has to go back for the city to the city clerk for certification. But in this case, it was taken, the circuit court decided to dismiss it before it even was sent to the city clerk on the issue of the electronic signatures. So there's another step that this takes if this court decides that electronic signatures should have been accepted or that no rulemaking procedures were in place.
Very well. Any other questions at this time? Mr. Kiuchi, anything further before we hear from Mr. McCorst?
Nothing further. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And I am going to announce at this time our closed. We're having some problems with our closed captioning, so we will get the captioning done and post a video after the oral argument today, properly captioned. Mr. McCorst, your argument. And you need to unmute, I'm afraid.
Mr. Chief Justice, can you hear me now? May it please the court, we have not had an opportunity to give a written reply to the reply filed here. And I think there's a conflagration between the two petitions before the court. So my argument here today will basically address the issues raised in the reply and give you, I think, solid reasons why you don't even have to reach the electronic issue question, because that is not ripe under the circumstances of this case. As the court is probably aware, the seminal document in this case for review is the first amended petition. The first amended petition, contrary to what was said in the reply brief, is a DocuSign petition. The DocuSign reference number is on the upper left-hand side of each page. When a first amended petition is filed, what are the legal consequences of that vis-a-vis the original petition that was filed? And again, we didn't have time to brief anything in contrary to the reply, but I will bring to the court's attention a half century of precedent for the proposition is that when you file a first amended petition, the original petition is superseded and supplanted by the first amended petition. And that case law begins in 1956 in a case called Wright versus Lum, 41 Hawaii 504 at 506-507, and was reaffirmed by Beneficial Hawaii Inc. versus Casey, 98 Hawaii 159-167, and has been the consistent precedent since that time. I am quoting from the language in the Beneficial case. An amended petition supersedes the original petition and renders the original petition of no legal effect. So the attempt to try to join the original petition with a first amended petition in a reply brief, A, is legally incorrect, and B, as I mentioned, is factually incorrect, because the original petition had a internet platform called change.org. The amended petition was on a platform called DocuSign, and they are different. And the first amended petition is the only document under review here. In Exhibit 7 to that first amended petition, the petition is stated, and it's different from the original petition in material ways. That first amended petition was signed not by 500 voters of the state of Hawaii, but one voter, Mr. Yoshimura. In order to establish subject matter jurisdiction over a petition of impeachment for the city prosecutor, there must be a minimum of 500 registered voters signing the petition at the time the petition is filed. Here we have one person. We're 499 short. So, as far as subject matter jurisdiction is concerned, no subject matter jurisdiction was conferred as to this petition because there were not the requisite number of registered voters signing the petition at the time it is initiated. Signatures under Bevins can't come later. They have to be present under Bevins and Kageyama at the time the petition is filed. So the seminal document for this court to review is the first amended petition. The original petition is not viable. It has no legal effect. It has no substance as far as this argument. Yet,
would you address the issue of the effect of the Administrative Procedures Act, whether there needed to be a rulemaking done by the city to in order to reject the petition electronic signatures?
Okay, thank you. My basic argument is you don't even have to reach that issue, but if you do want to reach that issue, we have the plain language of the statute. We have Section 5, which says that it's not mandatory. We have the sections that apply to the government, which are contained in 489E-18, which do not require any affirmative action by the city to preserve the status quo. And in fact, it says that no such action is required. The legislative history behind those in the standing committee report that we cited to you is of the same, that it's not required, it's discretionary, and you can preserve the status quo without doing anything as an interpretive rule. And even the comment section to the UETA itself, as we've cited in the brief, say you do not need to establish electronic signatures. You can preserve the status quo. It's completely up to the discretion of the agency to make that decision. Here, the status quo is being preserved. Wet signatures are required by the city and county. They're not changing anything. They're not engaged in rulemaking because they're not making a rule. It's simply an interpretive decision, and we cite the case law in our memo about that. You don't have to go through an APA procedure. In the Anderson case cited by the appellant, it's a completely different section, not comparable to the UETA version that we adopted. There in the statute, they require rulemaking from the lieutenant governor. Here, there is no such affirmative legislative requirement in UETA. In fact, UETA says you're not required to change. It's your discretion to change. If you have good reasons not to do it, as the city pointed out in its amicus brief, you don't have to do it. So there is no rulemaking requirement under the APA.
I think Mr. McHugh made the point that 49E18A says the state, each government agency of the state shall determine whether and to what extent it will send and accept. So I think he interprets that as a mandate. What would your response be to that?
I'd say Section 5 says it's not a mandate, and the specific sections to apply to governmental entities specifically say it's not a mandate. The legislative history says it's not a mandate, and the UETA comment section say it's not a mandate.
Thank you. Can you please continue?
So if you have a amended petition that is signed simply by one individual, there is no need to go beyond that in reaching your decision to conclude that the circuit court judge was correct in determining there's no subject matter jurisdiction. The idea.
Mr. McCorson, I think we have two questions. One, Judge Eddins, and then Justice Wilson. Judge Eddins, do you have a question?
Mr. McCorson, Mr. Kiyuchi indicated that he believed the circuit court should have referred the petition to the city clerk to verify and certify the information from the online petition that they had accumulated. Tell us how 12-203 relates to the verification and the certification of the duly registered voters, i.e. the resident addresses and the signatures, and whether 12-203 requires the certification before the filing of the petition for impeachment.
Thank you. First of all, I think Judge Crabtree was absolutely correct in not referring the first amended petition to the city clerk, because you can't do that unless there's 500 registered voters. Here we have one. So there was nothing to refer to the city clerk to verify as far as the operative document that's before you, the first amended petition.
Well, let's say, though, that the original change.org petition is at issue, notwithstanding your arguments about the First Amendment petition. Isn't there a precondition of certification before the filing of the petition?
That's exactly the point I would have made, under the city charter provision, in order to file a petition for impeachment of the prosecutor, a number of things have to occur. First of all, you have to have the petition. That petition has to be signed by 500 registered voters. And our position is it also has to be vetted by the city clerk before it even goes to the court for subject matter jurisdiction. So those three things have to occur prior to the time the petition is filed. And if we go back to the original petition would have a petition signed by 500 registered voters and have to be vetted and certified by the city clerk before the court establishes subject matter jurisdiction. None of that happened.
Justice Wilson, your question.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. McCorston, I wanted to ask your input about the issue of the validity of the signatures had they been electronic. And as you know, Anderson and Benjamin and Nee focus on whether there was an adequate record for determination of a certification or determination of the identities and the addresses of those who had been involved in signing the petition. In this case, the city exercised its discretion not to use electronic signatures. I wanted to ask you, from the point of view of determining the validity of the signatures, to what extent was that exercise of discretion supported? How, if at all, was the city clerk able to engage in certification if it had been electronic?
I really have nothing to add to what the city put in its amicus brief, but the city clerk has made a determination that it cannot certify the electronic signatures in the form in which provided the original change.org petition. First of all, the original change.org petition has never been properly brought before the court or before the city clerk. What you have in the original petition is, instead of 500 signatures or more of registered voters, you have a declaration from Mr. Yoshimura, a hearsay declaration. Attached to the hearsay declaration of Mr. Yoshimura, you have Exhibit 1 and Exhibit 2. Exhibit 2 purports to be a petition for impeachment somewhere in cyberspace under the change.org platform. It's not verified by change.org or anyone else. Exhibit 1 purports to be electronic signatures, but their Exhibit 1 and Exhibit 2 are not a unitary document, an integrated document showing a petition signed by the 500 or more people in Exhibit 1. So you don't even have a cognizable petition with 500 or more signatures to present to the city court in an original petition. You have, contrary to the plain language of the charter, which must be strictly construed according to this court's decisions in many different cases, you have, instead of a petition signed by 501 people, you have a declaration from Mr. Yoshimura, which is hearsay and incompetent, trying to attach two separate documents which are not integrated, one purportedly being some petition out there in cyberspace, another purporting to be signatures out there in cyberspace, but never the two are connected. You don't have anything to give to the city clerk.
Please continue, Mr. McPherson.
Again, my principal argument is you shouldn't even be considering the original petition and the so-called alleged signatures or petition that are out there in cyberspace, which you really don't know exist. I don't really know exist, and the city's clerk certainly can't know exist. That's been superseded and supplanted by the DocuSign petition, which I first mentioned. That's the only vehicle before you. To the extent Mr. Kiyuchi is arguing, well, I attached Exhibits 1 and 2 to the change.org petition to my amended petition, the people who signed the original petition were never given the opportunity to see the amended petition. That's undisputed. It wasn't recirculated. The people who signed the change.org petition never saw the first amended petition, which came 4 months thereafter. There's no evidence provided by Mr. Kiyuchi that it was recirculated to any of them. Those signatures can't be considered at all, which brings me back to the point. Mr. Yoshimura, on the DocuSign petition, is the only person who signed it. Sorry, but you're 499 signatures short. There's nothing to refer to the city clerk. There's no need to consider electronic signatures or HAPA in this case, because this case never reached subject matter jurisdiction. That concludes my argument. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Any further questions from the court? All right, then we'll hear from Mr. Kiyuchi, your rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. First of all, the first amended petition was not supported by DocuSign. It was supported by change.org. The finding of fact by Judge Crabtree, which is dated August 19, 2019, notes that in paragraph 3 of his findings of fact, that's in appendix 2 of our brief. Moreover, Mr. McCorson's making an argument that was already rejected in essence by the trial court, and Judge Crabtree basically rejected the notion that you have to have 500 signatures on the actual document filed with the court. He didn't file a cross appeal, therefore that issue doesn't come before the court. Specifically, in his conclusions of law, Judge Crabtree, in conclusion of law 12, disagreed with the argument that Mr. McCorston had made that the courts never had jurisdiction to even consider the First Amendment petition or the second proposed amended petition. So what that squarely brings us back to is the issue before the court really is whether or not electronic signatures were acceptable for the impeachment petition. And as we've argued, it was acceptable. I think that the city did not go through the HAPA process. Mr. McCorston, in response to the Chief Justice's question, said that it wasn't required. But I would note that it doesn't necessarily have to be in a statute, doesn't have to be in a city charter provision that requires rulemaking to occur. In our brief, we cited a couple of cases where it was an agency's policy that was implemented and that required HAPA to be applied. In the Nuuanu Valley Association, holding an agency's policy refusing to publicly disclose the documents was in and of itself a required rulemaking. The other case is the Hawaii Prince Hotel Waikiki case, which wasn't about a statute or an ordinance, was about a city of Prater's methodology for assessing the value of a golf course. And there the court found that the methodology was subject to rulemaking requirements. So Mr. McCorson argues that because it wasn't in the HRS, that it therefore it wasn't required to apply HAPA, and I just respectfully disagree. I think it's very clear that it doesn't have to be in an ordinance or a statute to require HAPA, that as long as it's got a prospective effect and it affects the public, and it in implements, interprets, or prescribes law or policy, then HAPA is required. And again,
Mr. Corston's argument, as I understood it, is that under Section 5, the default was the status quo, and that rulemaking wouldn't be required to go off of the status quo. What was your response to that, or what would you?
I would disagree with that. I think that the city never made a determination as required by 18A as to the extent of what they would allow. And the city's idea of the status quo really changed, because if you look at the early letters from Deputy Corporation Counsel Yost, she didn't take a position on the status quo. She'd only took that position on an April 18th and subsequently an April 23rd letter. But that's kind of the whole point, is you can't simply make a decision without a rule. You've got to submit that through the rulemaking process. Otherwise, it has the danger, as the Supreme Court case back in Hawaiian Electric Company stated, of appearing arbitrary and capricious. And that's the whole problem with Mr. McCorston's argument, is that it wasn't the status quo, that what it really was is the city making a last minute decision. If for impeachment petitions, we're not going to allow this. And, you know, it does require HAPA. And like I said, he still hasn't complied with 18A. Yes.
Judge Edens, your question.
You know, aside from the electronic signatures, to be a duly registered owner or registered voter, you need to have a resident address. Is that right, Mr. Kitchy?
I think that was one of the disputes because we had presented evidence through Needland Bueno saying that you don't have to verify whether a voter is actually the voter with a residence address. And we've cited that recent appellate court case that said that there's some privacy interest in disclosing the residence address. So I think that's still an issue of contention.
Well, I'm not talking about voter registration, because with the city clerk, they have to certify. They have to certify that they're duly registered voters. And I'm going to circle back to the question that I posed to Mr. McCorriston. Shouldn't the petition have been submitted first to the city clerk? And then if it's rejected, that's when you file your declaratory relief action.
I would respectfully disagree with that, because that wasn't really what was done in Moncho. What was done in Moncho was first filed with the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court referred it over to the city clerk. So the question becomes, where in the certification?
Well, let me ask you this, though. Didn't the Supreme Court in Moncho say that that was a preliminary question or a preliminary condition, much akin to giving it to the city clerk first to certify?
Well, the Supreme Court did refer it over to the city clerk. However, you first would need a document there. I would argue you would have to file a document with the court, as the document with the court was filed in Moncho. So in this case, the expectation is when we filed it with the circuit court, they would be referred over to the city clerk for certification. You know, that would be the expectation. And whether that's done is I disagree that it should be done as a declaratory action. I think it's a straight on petition that then gets referred to the city clerk.
So is it your position that subject matter jurisdiction is achieved prior to possibly registered voters being certified and verified and vetted?
I think subject matter jurisdiction is achieved once the city clerk has the opportunity to verify whether there are 500 voters. And you have to be able to kick off the process somehow, which is why the original filing, like in Moncho here, we kicked it off with a circuit court petition. Then it gets referred over, and then the court can hear it. The court cannot hear or conduct a hearing on the impeachment petition until the 500 signatures are certified. I would agree with that.
Thank you.
Justice McKenna. Nope, that's Kenny. There you go.
How would the city clerk determine whether the electronic signatures were actually valid?
The DocuSign has an audit trail, and change.org also had information on the electronic signatures, which would lead it back to allow the city clerk to certify that they were voters. One way is by having the date of birth or the last four numbers of Social Security number on there, which is what we did with the DocuSign petition. And the city, that should be enough information along with the person's name for the city clerk to certify whether they're a registered voter.
Isn't that information pretty easily ascertainable in this day and age with respect to other people? You can actually figure out a lot of people's last four, as well as DOB.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think in this day and age, that might be the case, and the residence address is even more obtainable. But what what DocuSign had, which is why we switched platforms on the second amended petition, they had an audit trail going back to who actually affixed the electronic signature. And that's why we think that that's a, that was more.
How is, what's that audit trail? The IP address of the computer that they were on?
The audit trail goes back to the IP address of the individual. Yes, that's correct.
And how is an IP address attached to a computer or to a person?
The IP address would be to a server, from my understanding. Yeah.
Right. So why couldn't one server have like 10 or 20 people? Why couldn't one person create like, do this for all the members in their family and everybody that they know?
But then you would have different names and you could verify whether those names are actually registered voters. So you could use the same computer, but the names would have to match up with the voter rolls.
How is the city clerk supposed to determine whether or not that person actually authorized the DocuSign?
Well, that's the audit trail would go back and say, okay, John Smith or Jane Doe specifically executed the document, and then you would check whether Jane Doe or John Smith is a registered voter.
So, but how do they know that Jane Doe or John Smith actually executed the DocuSign on the computer? Why couldn't it have been somebody else sitting at the computer?
Well, it could be, but it's like the Anderson v. Bell court argued, is it's that there's a slight difference between that and handwritten holographic signatures. So the idea of handwritten holographic signatures being allowed and electronic signatures not being allowed is kind of ludicrous, because the electronic signatures have more of a way of tracing back than the handwritten signatures were. The handwritten signatures would be no different in terms of being able to compare it back.
But that's what voting by mail is, right? The city clerk actually checks the signature against another signature on file, like the driver's license.
Right, but that was specifically what the Anderson v. Bell court addressed and rejected. They said that just because it's a holographic signature, it doesn't give it any more legal effect than an electronic signature, especially the electronic signature had the audit trail going back.
But as Judge Edens had indicated, the Utah statute actually has a specific provision requiring the government to opt out. And the policy that the Utah Supreme Court was trying to enforce there was nomination. It was a nomination signature situation. Isn't it a different when it's impeachment?
No, I don't think it's any different. I think in the Utah case, it wasn't a requirement. It says may adopt rules. The Hawaii statute says shall make the determination under what circumstances to accept. One of the things to remember is that the city already accepts through voter registration electronic signatures. You can go online and you can register to vote the electronic signatures. It doesn't require a hard holographic signature. And I would argue the very fact that the city on one hand allows one to register to vote electronically, but doesn't allow the acceptance of electronic signatures seems to be contradictory.
Very well. Justice Wilson has a question, I believe. And Mr. Kiyuchi, you may want to mute and he's speaking, because we are getting some feedback. So,
thank you, Mr. Kiyuchi. I wanted to be clear about your description of the timing for the determination of the discretion under 489E. That is, it's a point at which the city clerk would be authorized to exercise its discretion of whether to use electronic signatures or not. So let me ask you this. Is it your position that the rulemaking would be engaged in before the discretion's exercised, and wouldn't you expect that once that discretion is exercised, from what you've seen in this case, the city clerk would determine that it did not accept electronic signatures?
I would agree with that. I think that the city first should have used 18A and made that determination and adopted a rule, and then that would have been submitted to the city. I think that for the city to reject that in the absence of a rule, I think was not acceptable.
But once the inspector in this record, though, that from the point of view of the city, their electronic signatures, I think you need to mute your, there you go. I just wanted to make sure I understand the record. Based on this record, wouldn't you expect that the determination by the city clerk when the discretion was exercised would be that there isn't sufficient validity in the electronic signature process to justify using that rather than signatures that are hard copy signatures?
But that was precisely the problem here. When we filed the petition, we wrote to the city, and the city took initially no position on whether or not electronic signatures were acceptable. They didn't take that position till Ms. Yost's letter of April 18th and subsequent letter of April 23rd. And that's the real problem, is that you can't have a situation where the city all of a sudden says, well, I guess we're going to reject electronic signatures when they don't have a rule that says what they can do. That's the whole problem, especially when they're already accepting electronic signatures for purposes of voter registration.
Mr. Kiyuchi, we have a question from Judge Ashford. Judge Ashford.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Mr. Kiyuchi, I apologize. I'm going to take you back, and I'm getting away from the rulemaking issue, so I'm not meaning to distract you, but where in the record can I see 500 signatures, whether electronic, wet, or any other form?
When we filed our initial petition, and then when we also filed our first amended petition, attached to that, when the first petition was filed, we had a list of 500 people that had signed up through change.org. So that's where you can find it in the record. It's with the first initial petition.
Okay, so just to clarify, I believe the answer is nowhere. In other words, with the initial petition, you have a spreadsheet that was created by Mr. Yoshimura that summarizes and lists 500 or more signatures. But I believe there's nowhere in the record before this court that shows 500 signatures. And I think there's only a record of a single electronic signature of your client. Is that correct?
Mr. Yoshimura didn't create the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet was created by change.org. So what happened is that the people go online, sign with change.org, and that's what was generated, and that's what was attached. Those people were given the petition. They were given the opportunity to sign electronically.
So just to make sure I'm understanding the state of the record, is there more than one electronic signature in the record?
Yes, Mr. Yoshimura's signature is actually a wet signature. The electronic signatures in the record are all obtained through change.org, and the spreadsheet that was generated is through change.org.
So sorry to belabor this, and I'll let it rest at this point, but where can I see 500 signatures in the record as distinct from a spreadsheet with 500 or more names that have been collated or tabulated or, you know, compiled?
Signatures would be part of the spreadsheet, and then when they go to the city clerk would have the information to be able to verify them.
Justice McKenna has a question.
Mr. Kiuchi, I just wanted to clarify. I heard you suggest that actual signature should not be required because a person can now register to vote electronically. However, you are aware that the city does require actual signatures to be provided. After the mail-in ballot law came into effect, what they're doing is, if they don't have a signature, I guess a recent signature on file, they're sending out cards requiring people to assign, provide an actual signature to be mailed back in, so they have a record of what the person's signature, recent signature, looks like. Isn't that correct?
I would agree with that, but the whole point is that the city allows you to initially register to vote through the electronic signature process. It doesn't require wet signature initially. I would agree that at some point the holographic signature is required, but the whole point of that is that the city does allow you to initially register to vote using the electronic signature system.
Then why should the petitions not have to comply? The signatures on the petitions, somebody needs to check whether those were actually signed by 500 registered voters. Would you not agree with that? And there's no way to do that through an electronic signature.
I would disagree, because if you look at, again, the cases both in Anderson v. Bell and then the West Virginia case, you've got a situation where you can verify whether the electronic signatures were affixed, because you've got the audit trail going back. And the whole idea is, because you got the audit trail going back, you can be able to verify that those were the individuals that fixed their electronic signatures to the petition. That's the whole idea. And if you look at, I mean, the Anderson v. Bell decision to me is very instructive, because it addresses the same concerns that the city had: holographic signatures versus electronic signatures.
All right, Mr. Kiuchi, you're over your time, so I'll allow you to wrap up with any final thoughts.
I really have nothing other than what I've already stated. Thank you very much for allowing us to argue the case.
All right. Well, thank you to both our attorneys for your arguments today. The court will take this matter under advisement. And once again, thanks to Judges Eddins and Ashford for joining us on our panel today. Aloha.